Welcome to the most listened to golf in the world, the Fairways of Life show, on air, online, and around the world, with the most candid interviews, unforgettable stories, taking you beyond the ropes. Here's your host, New York Times best-selling author, Matt Adams.
Welcome into Fairways of Life show, folks. Absolute delight to have your company from wherever you are joining us around the globe. I am super pumped about today's show. We are having one of the great players of all time today as our guest, none other than Tom Watson himself. Listen to the accolades that accompany this man, his career, and his life. A member, of course, of the World Golf Hall of Fame, 70 professional wins to his credit, 39 PGA Tour wins amongst that. That puts him in the top 10 all time. He is an 8-time major champion. He's won twice at the Masters. He won the 1982 U.S. Open. He won 5 times at the Open. A 4-time United States Ryder Cup team member in 1977, 81, 83, and 89. He had a 10-4-1 Ryder Cup record, by the way. He is a 2-time United States Ryder Cup captain, a 14 PGA Tour victors to his credit, PGA Tour champions, including 6 senior majors along the way. He's an accomplished, of course, golf course architect, including a redesign of Bally Bunyan's Cashin course, which hopefully if we'll get time today, I'll talk to him about that, which I'm looking forward to. The work he's done with the first tee and with kids these days is second to none. I want to talk to him about that as well. His new initiative is called Watson Links. It's a pleasure to welcome Tom Watson to the show. I guess the first question I want to ask you, Tom, is how are you feeling? How are you healing up?
Well, thanks for asking. It's good to be on your show, Matt. I've been rehabbing my shoulder here for quite a long time. I had a little problem with a go-kart for my grandkids and turned it over and stuck my arm out and had it replaced. And it's been quite a process, but it's getting better. I'm playing some golf and I'm getting ready to go down to Texas to ride some practice on my horses to get ready for a show the following month in late April. I will be going to the Masters and looking forward to that. And actually, I'm going to be presenting the trophies at the drive, chip, and putt contest that Augusta National puts on nationally.
Fantastic. That sounds like a lot of fun. Those are a lot of subjects that I definitely want to touch base with you on. I am curious, knowing you, what did you do during the period in which you were really rehabbing? I mean, it's not like you to sit still. Were you beside yourself at a time when you just couldn't do anything else?
Well, it was mainly rehab. You know, it was just, you know, sticking with the program and trying to get the range of motion with my arm get better and the strength to get better. But you know, enough of talking about my injuries. Let's talk about golf.
Definitely. Now, part of the golf that I love to talk to you about, but this is another thing that sometimes in you and Jack Nicklaus are very similar in this regard. When you look back, you guys are so forward thinking, and it was cool to see your enthusiasm, talk about getting back on the horses again, et cetera. But have you started to allow yourself time to really reflect on the glory of what you accomplished? I'm curious where your mind goes if you do.
Honestly, I don't look back. I'm just looking forward in my life. I've got, golf was great to me. I achieved part of my dreams, or most of my dreams of being a heck of a player. Won some major championships. Had some great contests with Jack, and played on the Ryder Cup teams. Captained the Ryder Cup teams. Golf is such an integral part of my life, but there are other things in my life, you know, with relationships and the horses and the things that I'm carrying forward to when I make my final putt on the 18th hole in my life.
When you and I have had the pleasure of talking about it in the past, talking about your background, talking about where you came from, talking about your home, I remember you've told me that, among other things, that your home was a place of music. I'm curious about how you feel like your childhood, your upbringing, the community that you are from, how that lent itself to helping to later define who you would become?
Well, I had a great set of parents. Mom and Dad, they raised their sons, I think, the right way. They raised them with a lot of jazz music, the big band sound, the wonderful sounds of Errol Garner and Charlie Byrd, and the big bands. I remember being played at the house all the time. But they also introduced me to a lot of things in life. First and foremost, I guess you might say, golf. When I was 6 years old, my dad put a golf club in my hand, showed me the grip, said, "Son, this is the way you grip it. You see knuckles on your left hand, and your V should point to your right shoulder." And that's kind of a hook grip in today's lingo, but that's how I started. And then he gave me the opportunity to play golf. Now, he's a member of a country club, and I had a chance as a kid to go out and play by myself, play with other kids, but more importantly, play with my father, who taught me the etiquette of the game, but he also taught me how to play. And, he really mentored me, as most of the pros on the tour will tell you, that their father started them in the game of golf. And that's what I'm trying to do right now with our program here in Kansas City and expanding it up nationally. It's called Watson Links. And that is to give kids the opportunity to go play golf with a mentor on a golf course. And, we're going forward very fast with this. I'm looking forward to, continuing on this program and expanding it so that we get more kids to be able to get the access. They have free access to play, get on a golf course and play with somebody who knows how to play and knows the game, just like I did with my father. That's the whole point of this program.
What are the virtues, do you think, Tom, from the game of golf that carry over into life lessons that you hope to impart to these young people?
Well, I think a lot of it is owning up to your good shots, but more importantly, owning up to your bad shots. And it's just like life. You're not going to hit great golf shots continually and playing golf. You're going to hit some bad shots. So how do you deal with those bad shots? How do you deal with a bad round, a bad tournament? It's the same thing in life. How do you deal with the roadblocks that you face in life? That's what the game of golf, I think, teaches more than anything.
WatsonLinks.org, folks, if you want more information on what we're discussing with the legend right now, WatsonLinks.org. Have you guys been able to see tangible results from these efforts with Watson Links where, I mean, obviously, you're going to impact lives. What's it like when you start to see those results coming back and realizing you're helping kids realize with higher aspirations, they can go to school, they can get work. There's lots of things that they can do that maybe they thought they couldn't previously.
Well, that's what the game of golf does. I've been a very big proponent of the First Tee program, getting kids started in the game, learning the game. And they teach them the 9 core values, which essentially, if you look at it, Matt, that's the etiquette of the game of golf. That's how you act on the golf course. You don't yell in somebody's backswing. You stand in a certain place. You replace your divots. Things that just normally you have to do. And the game really teaches you a lot of life skills.
What's interesting about that, Tom Watson, is that we live in a world that, I think arguably it could be said that there's a diminishment of civility. And yet through the game of golf, you're able to impart these lessons to young people that really they're going to carry with them for the rest of their lives, obviously, but they're also going to be able to benefit from them.
I think people who watch golf, they respect that. They respect the way that the players on the 18th hole take off their hats and shake the hands of their fellow competitors, the person who just beat the daylights out of them or won the tournament. And that's just part of respecting your fellow man.
What's interesting with that is when you think about when you made your way, when you came out on tour, the first if you say the first golden age with golf, which arguably would see Hagen, Sarazen, Jones, and the second golden age would be defined by the great American triumphant, right? With Byron Nelson, who I know you knew very, very well, Ben Hogan, Sam Snead. And you came in at a time when those latter gentlemen were still alive and active. And I think that's fascinating to me that you played through an era where you saw stars that are still talked about today and those that were of legendary mythical status now. What was it like for you having those kind of people as mentors?
Well, let me specifically address my great friendship with Byron Nelson. Byron, if he wasn't the greatest ball striker and player in the world, I don't know who else would take this place. You know, he won 18 tournaments in 1 year. He won 11 in a row. He retired early from the game, so he didn't continue to play in the meat of his career. And matter of fact, Byron, with all the wonderful times I spent with him, he said, you know, Tom, I was a better player when I was 50 than I was when I was 30, you know, the late 30s and 40s when I was winning everything. And that, to me, just being around him to hear what he had to say about the game, how he had to play the game when he said he grew up poor as a church mouse, and money was a big, big deal back then. You know, he barely had enough money to stay in the tour. He won some money out in California, and basically that allowed him to continue to play in the tour. The wonderful stories he had about his life, the players' lives, when they drove in caravans and car caravans rather than going by private jets, as the pros do today, it seems like. They struggled, but they loved the game. You know, they absolutely loved competing and playing the game. Those stories, when I go to the Masters, to the past champions dinner on Tuesday night, early on in my career, after I won the Masters in 77, I had the opportunity to go in and sit down with Gene Sarazen, with Claude Harmon, with Byron, and with Sam, and with those players, and listen to their stories. So I was a golf historian. I read about them and their exploits in books. Down the Fairway by O.B. Keeler was the Bible to me. I love that book. To listen to their stories, it gave me an understanding of what they went through, and a foundation for my career. When I came out in the career, I looked up to Arnold Palmer. I looked up specifically to Jack. But there are players out there: Gene Littler, Julius Boros, Don January, Miller Barber. Those players right there that I looked up to. And when you're a kid in the tour, you want to impress these players so that they look at you and you said, yeah, kid, you can play. That was my goal, is to kind of get a nod of affirmation. You can play. And I think that's universal with anybody coming out in the tour. They want to impress the players that they've watched and they know are the great players. They want their affirmations.
Incredible. The whole thing, I mean, kid, you did play. I mean, it's unbelievable, the stories and the names that Tom Watson was just sharing with us. I have a chill running right up my spine. We're going to continue with more with this legend right after this. The Fairways of Life show is brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore, the number one golf retailer in the land, coast to coast, big, beautiful stores, but it's the people within them that are the best of the best. You can shop with the pros at the PGA Tour Superstore, your happy place.
Relax. Easy now. Find your happy place. It's all in the hips. Just tap it in.
Yes!
Find the latest clubs and apparel at Golf's Happy Place, the PGA Tour Superstore.
In Ireland, golf is more than just a game. Come and experience our world-famous Lynx courses and our world-famous Parkland courses. all set alongside world-famous scenery. And visit our world-famous historic sites. And while you're here, enjoy our world-famous hospitality. Fill your heart with Ireland at ireland.com/golf.
It screams. It tracks. It's soft. It reacts. It is the Bridgestone Tour B with a game-changing reactive cover designed to spring faster off your driver and stick longer to your wedges. Try Bridgestone's Tour Bs, the Tour Ball reinvented.
The Gen 6 iron is a culmination of everything that we have learned as a team, the absolute best golf club I've ever hit. It's something special. Say hello to the new PXG Gen 6 iron. The longest, most accurate irons we've ever made. They go higher and farther than any iron that I have hit to date, and they're so easy to hit. Super excited for the consumer to try these. They're gonna love them.
PXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Baseball? Nah. Football? Done it. I think I'm gonna go after the PGA Tour.
Bo, you're gonna need the right equipment company.
I think I got that.
You know, Tour Edge backs all their clubs with a lifetime warranty.
I know.
They ship all their premium custom clubs in 48 hours.
I know.
All their premium clubs are hand-built in the USA.
I know.
You know, Tour Edge has won 35 times out here.
Guys, I know.
Pound for pound, nothing comes close.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to boynegolf.com.
Welcome back to the Fairways of Life show, folks. Absolute delight to have your company. Our guest today is the legendary Tom Watson. Let me just give you a little insight into what this man has accomplished. 619 starts on the PGA Tour, 213 on the PGA Tour Champions. Combined, 832 tour starts with 108 either wins or runner-up positions. What? That means from 1968, when he started out, to 2022, his last champion start, Tom Watson either won or finished runner-up 13% of the time over 54 years. And 319 of them were top 10 finishes for an astounding 39%. It is nothing but remarkable. And that's the man that is joining us right now. Tom, when we talked about your background, when we talked about your upbringing, when we talked about your mentors and the people that you looked up to and your desire to impress them, was it always part of your nature to have a very, very high work ethic? Were you self-motivating in that regard?
Without a doubt. I came on the tour and I didn't have a clue if I was going to ever make a birdie. Matter of fact, when I went to the qualifying school, they held it down in Palm Beach Gardens in Florida. I started out to play six rounds to try to qualify for the tour. And the very first hole I played was a par five and I birdied it. So I got off to a good start and I qualified for the tour, got on the tour and failed a number of times until I finally figured out a way to trust my swing. And that was kind of the late 1976. And I took that swing thought into 1977, and my career really blossomed after that. But, you know, my start on the tour was uncertain, but I did know one thing. I was going to practice harder than anybody out on the tour. And I don't think anybody did practice any harder than I did.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because those were back in the days when
you guys didn't have easy access to coaching or any type of technology to help you to know what video. Your face angle is, the position. Yeah, videos, et cetera.
And we had to pay for our practice balls.
Absolutely incredible. Tom, what's remarkable, first of all, I have to note to people in case they're not aware of your specific career and when you started to win your major championships. When Tom Watson says that he found something in his swing around 1976 that carried into that remarkable year of 1977, which I'm going to talk to him about in just a moment, consider the fact that this man was already a major champion by that time. It speaks to just how remarkable it is that he has achieved what he has. From those early days on, how were you with sleeping on a third round lead coming into the final round? How did you sleep that night before?
I slept longer, but I dreamt more. I didn't have a problem sleeping, but I dreamt more. I remember that.
Good dreams?
Nobody remembers their dreams, right? Although we do have our nightmare dreams, don't we, Matt? We have our, one dream I had was always, a lot of it reared its ugly head where I was putting up a hill and the ball, if it missed the cup, would come back at me. Actually, when I was a kid, I used to practice on the carpet at home. We had this little device, device that had a hole in it, and you put it along the carpet and it'd go up to the hole and the ball would return to you. But if you missed it, the ball would go up and then come back at your feet. So maybe that's what instigated my nightmare dreams about being on the golf course and the ball came back at me. I had to make it for it not to come back at me. That's the thing.
Oh, well, that is tough. But you were great as a young man. You were very aggressive with your putting. I don't think I've ever had a chance to talk to you about that in all the conversations that we've had over the years. Was that natural to you, that instinct that you were going to go for it? And if you missed, you knew you would make it coming back?
Well, the one thing that I relied on when I was a young player, and it was my putting. I was a great putter. If I knocked it 3 feet by or 4 feet by, I knew I was going to make it coming back. It's not that way anymore. In the last half of my career, it wasn't like that.
When we were talking about inspirations and mentors to you, you had told me in the past that Bruce Edwards made you better, not only as a golfer, but as a person. What did you mean by that?
Well, Bruce was he carried my bag for some 30 years on the and what I loved about Bruce was his attitude. He never was down. His glass was always half full. No matter how badly I was playing, he was there cheering me on, kicking me in the butt, trying to get me out of my pity pot. Sometimes you get mad. I got mad quite a bit when I wasn't playing well. He said, "Come on, let's get it done." I go to the 70s first hole at the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. I'm tied with Nicklaus in the last round, and I hooked my 2-iron into the left rough. And I walk off the tee with Bruce off to my side, my right side, and I said, "Well, that's dead." And he said, "No, come on, let's get this thing up and down." And that's Bruce for you. And fortunately, luckily, I chipped it in.
When you chip that in, this is such a great story. When you chip that in and you proceed to dance around the green, you were pointing. Were you pointing at Bruce, and what was that for?
Well, to continue the story, when he got up to the ball's left of the green, probably 15 or 16 feet from the flag. The ball was in the rough, and I had to hit to a downslope, so I had to hit the softest chip possible. And I knew what I had to do, and that was just try to hit it as softly as possible. So I took the sandwich out of the bag, and as I was doing that, Bruce said to me, he said, "Get it close." And for some reason, I said, "Get it close, hell, I'm going to hold it." And I did hold it, and I raised my hands, I ran around the green, I turned around, I pointed at Bruce and I said, see, I told you I was going to hold it.
I love it. Absolutely love it. You also came from a generation that I can't think of any of you that have ever told me that you used a sports psychologist. Maybe you had, you know, the Bruce Edwards of your life or someone else that who was a shoulder that you'd lean on. But where did the toughness come from that generation, I guess, is the way I would want to ask it, that you guys were able to figure it out for yourselves out there?
Well, I'll tell you a little story that it makes you tough. I was sitting in the locker room at the Colonial Country Club, playing in the Colonial Invitation. I just had a Good Friday round, and I was sitting in there, and Julius Boris was sitting behind me, and in walks, let me think about it, Chichi Rodriguez. And Chichi came into me and said, Tom, what a great round of golf you played. I think I shot 67, 300 par or something like that. And then he started kind of effuse over me. He said, yeah, you're playing so good. You're a great player and all this. And Boris in the back of me said, yeah, I'd like to have all the money you pissed away. And it took me back just a little bit, but he was right, because I'd had a lot of opportunities to win on the tour and I failed. And I couldn't finish the deal. And, you know, that's the old guys. The old guys in the tough, you know, putting you in your place. And, you know, that's how tough they were. You know, it wasn't a joke. He just was making a very accurate comment. And I took that as exactly that. It didn't offend me. It just said, you know, he's right. I've got to do better. I've got to learn how to win, which I finally did.
And many, many times. At that, since you brought up Colonial, I guess it's a perfect time for me to ask you about, how well did you know Ben Hogan? Did you get much of an opportunity to spend time around that legend?
Well, I never played golf or watched Ben Hogan hit a golf shot, but I did have the opportunity to have lunch with him one time back in the middle 80s. And I had the opportunity to ask him a couple of questions there at the end of the lunch, and he was just as gracious as possible. Just we just had a wonderful conversation. And so I asked him the question. I said, how nervous were you when you played in competition? And he looks at me, that smile stopped like this, and he got serious. He said, Tom, I was so nervous, I was jumping out of my skin. And I said to myself, wow. Yeah, if this is the Iceman, the guy that showed no emotion, who people said he was rock solid under pressure, which he was, when he said he was that nervous, I took that to heart. And when people ask me how did I kind of learn how to play under pressure, I learned how to play under pressure strictly by experience, by putting myself in positions to win under pressure. You're always under pressure when you start a tournament, but when it gets down to at the end of the tournament, when you have a chance to win, the pressure increases. And some people can handle it, and some people can't. And I learned that a couple things I needed to do to keep that pressure level from getting above the boiling point. And a couple things were breathing. You saw me on the golf course yawning. I'd be going like that. Why was I doing that? Because I wasn't breathing. My breathing was shallow, and I wanted to get air in my lungs. And when you do that, and I tell people this when they're under pressure, whether they're riding horses into the show pen or any other type of pressure situation, I said, use your breath control to relax you. And you can do that. Take two or three big breaths, and then you can just do it, and you can feel the tingling down your arms where it relaxes you. And that's one of the key elements of me learning how to deal with pressure.
What does that go hand in hand with what you told me previously, what Lord Byron had told you about also trying to just, like when you yawned, it kind of brought this up my mind, Tom, about just trying to slow everything down?
You've done your history. Byron did say, you know, he told me one time, he said, Tom, I play fast like you, but I learned that if I can just walk a beat slower, just a step slower, when I'm playing, that helps slow my rhythm down. So I don't go as fast with my golf swing.
WatsonLinks.org, folks, is the link that you can go to find out more about this mentorship program we were talking with Mr. Tom Watson about. I want to talk to him about even more about his visions for the future and the role that golf can play for it, legacies and more, as we continue on the Fairways of Life show with the legend Tom Watson after this.
Relax. Easy now. Find your happy place. It's all in the hips. Just tap it in.
Yes!
Find the latest clubs and apparel at Golf's Happy Place, the PGA Tour Superstore.
In Ireland, golf is more than just a game. Come and experience our world-famous Lynx courses and our world-famous Parkland courses, all set alongside world-famous scenery. And visit our world-famous historic sites. And while you're here, enjoy our world-famous hospitality. Fill your heart with Ireland at ireland.com/golf.
It screams. It tracks. It's soft. It reacts. It is the Bridgestone Tour B with a game-changing reactive cover designed to spring faster off your driver and stick longer to your wedges. Try Bridgestone's Tour Bs, the Tour Ball reinvented.
The Gen 6 iron is a culmination of everything that we have learned as a team, the absolute best golf club I've ever hit. It's something special. Say hello to the new PXG Gen 6 iron. The longest, most accurate irons we've ever made. They go higher and farther than any iron that I have hit to date, and they're so easy to hit. Super excited for the consumer to try these. They're gonna love them.
PXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Baseball? Nah. Football? Done it. I think I'm gonna go after the PGA Tour.
Bo, you're gonna need the right equipment company.
I think I got that.
You know, Tour Edge backs all their clubs with a lifetime warranty.
I know.
They ship all their premium custom clubs in 48 hours.
I know.
All their premium clubs are hand-built in the USA.
I know.
You know, Tour Edge has won 35 times out here.
Guys, I know.
Pound for pound, nothing comes close.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to boynegolf.com.
Zero Friction introduces the Wheel Pro Push Cart Golf Bag with its revolutionary 3-in-1 design, supportive legs that spring into action, a comfort grip handle with three locking positions, accessories for the modern golfer enhanced by 7 pockets for more storage, and removable all-terrain wheels which slide right into place. The new Zero Friction Wheel Pro Golf Bag checks every box for every golfer. Push, carry, or cart, the decision is yours thanks to Zero Friction. Head to ZeroFriction.com today.
As we welcome you back to the Fairways of Life show, we are absolutely delighted and honored to have the company of Tom Watson, a member of the World Golf Hall of Fame, an 8-time major champion, 6 more times a major champion amongst the PGA Tour champions ilk. And this is a man that continues to give back in so many ways, not only with his opinion, which he's happy to give, but also with boots on the ground. WatsonLinks.org, an absolutely fascinating concept that he has to use the game of golf to help young people be around people of accomplishments and understand the possibilities that exist in their life. With Watson Links, Tom, did you conceive this concept? Did someone bring it to you? But how did you get so enthusiastically on board with this?
You know, over the years, Matt, I've created a foundation to basically do one thing, and that is to create lifetime golfers and to create lifetime golfers with kids in mind. Here in Kansas City, we started a Clubs for Kids program, then that evolved into another program, which was kind of the precursor of the First Tee program. Then the First Tee program came on board, and I was a big proponent of that to get kids learning the game. But there was always a missing element there to me. How do you get the kids from the practice tee to the golf course, playing with somebody like I played with my father, to give them the understanding of how to play the game? How do you make that putt from 4 feet downhill? How do you read a green? How do you hit the ball out of rough? How do you hit it off an upslope? How do you hit it off a downslope? How do you hit it out of a bunker like this? And have real golf course experience. And if it finally dawned on me, you know, a program like we have now at Watson Links is the way to do that. It's the missing link, is to get kids who don't have necessarily have the access to playing golf, or especially not playing golf with somebody who knows how to play and loves the game with a passion, to get out in the golf course with those people. I get back to the way I grew up. I want to give back to that in the same sense that my father taught passion and the love for the game, how to play it, and how to act on the golf course. Kids today, if they get started, they want to know how to play real golf. They want to know how to act on the golf course. And our Watson Links program gives that opportunity to these kids.
WatsonLinks.org, folks, for more information. I want to jump back to 1977 at that Masters, because you referenced the year 1977, and it was so remarkable for you and for the world of golf for multiple reasons. Final round, through 16 holes, you are tied with Jack Nicklaus. Could you take us through, with your memories, what you did on that Sunday on the 17th hole? What was the edge?
Before the 17th hole, I was I was going neck and neck with Jack. Jack birdied 13, I birdied 13. Jack birdied 15, I birdied 15. We're still tied, and I'm nervous as a cat on a hot tin roof. And I get up to the 16th hole, and I had a choice between a 5-iron or a 6-iron. And I said, you know, I'm going to hit a cut 5-iron right at the flag. I'm going to go right at it, because I was feeling very confident about my golf swing. And when I made that swing, it was about a 3/4 5-iron. It wasn't a full 5-iron. I hit that shot, started right at the bunker, and it cut back to the flag. And when I saw that ball, after I felt the shot and saw the ball, the pressure just drained right out of my body, just went like this. And it was an amazing feeling. And I played the last two holes under a lot less pressure as I did the first seven holes of the back nine. It was 17, and it's like a big breath. I played 17. I hit a drive down the middle of the fairway, hit a shot in there about 15 feet, and I made the putt. The putt went in, I made a birdie, and I said, okay, now I'm one up on Jack. Let's see what happens. And then I get up to the 18th hole, I hit it in the fairway, I walk up to my ball, and I watch Jack and the crowd groan. And I said, I looked over there and says, was that for bogey? And they said, yeah, it's for bogey. So now the pressure starts to elevate a little bit more right there, but it wasn't nearly as much as it was on the front or the first part of the back nine. And I hit a shot to the right edge of the green and two putted to win. But that putt at 17 was under a lot less pressure than any other shot that the entire day.
Absolutely amazing. I'm going to stay 1977 for a second here. I want to go ahead in 77 to the Open at Turnberry. It was famously known as the Duel in the Sun. And the battle that you had once again with Jack Nicklaus over the weekend was historic. It was so incredible. But even as we look at that final round, Jack Nicklaus was, through four holes, three strokes ahead of Tom Watson in that final round. And it's remarkable to me because you came back from that deficit against Jack Nicklaus. What are your memories from that point?
Well, it was a heavyweight fight is what it was. Jack did, he birdied the fourth hole and was up by three. Then I turned it on. I birdied three out of the next four holes to tie him up. Then I bogeyed nine. He birdied 10 to go two up. Then I birdied 13 to go one down. And then the big happening of the whole day was the putt at 15 from off the green. Jack hit a beautiful shot right in there. I pulled my four iron just to the left of the green, but it was up on a little hill like this. You know, there's no grass in the golf course, so I could putt it down this hill. Jack hit it right at the flag, about 15 feet short. And I looked over this putt. It broke about 5 feet to the right, and I knocked the son of a gun in. And Jack just missed his putt, and now we're back to even. So we both par the really tough 16th hole, and then the 17th hole, Jack made an uncharacteristic error. He outdrove me just a little bit. I hit first to the par five. I knocked it to the back of the green. Jack hit a four iron and hit it fat and to the right. It was a terrible shot. And he was off the green, and there was a bunch of little moguls over there, and he hit this beautiful little pitch and run with I don't know what club, a pitching wedge or a nine iron that ran up and down through the moguls up about 4 feet from the hole. I putted my ball down for a gimme birdie, and stood back and watched Jack fully expecting to make the putt, and he missed the putt. So now I go into the 18th hole, one up, and then all the fireworks happened again.
So when you get to that 18th tee, and when Jack Nicklaus hit his drive to the right, how close was he with the gorse bushes over there and that? How close was he to a point where he may not be able to even get the club on the ball? And what did you expect Jack Nicklaus to do at that point when you were safe?
Well, I hit a one iron off the tee down the left side, close to the bunkers, but fortunately didn't go in. And Jack took a driver, and he hit a right to right like this. I yelled four because the crowd was, you know, it's way off to the right. And the crowd kind of parted like this, and the gorse was right behind the crowd. And so I'm one up. I walk up the fairway. And before I hit my second shot, I wanted to determine what type of shot Jack was going to play, had to play. So I walked up and got pretty close to his ball. His ball was in the rough about that deep. And Whoa. The course was that far to the right of his ball. And it was being unplayable. But I told myself, well, he's got a swing, and the greatest rough player in the world can hit. It was about to play this shot. So I said, I've got to go back and hit a shot. And I did. I went back and hit a pretty fair shot, pretty close to the hole. And then I walked up and watched Jack take this mighty swing out of this heavy rough. And that ball came out like this. And I said, only Jack could hit it like that. There's a big swath of grass at the end of his club on the follow through like this. And the ball hit short of the green and bounded up under the green about 30 feet from the hole. And, game was still on. Even though I hit it close, Jack Nicklaus, in his career, made more birdie putts in the last hole of a major championship than anybody else in the history of golf. So I had to expect him to make the putt. And when he putted it, 10 feet from the hole, I said, that's dead center. And it was dead center in the hole, made a birdie.
Wow.
So I had to, I had to kind of collect myself, but I was already prepared. I said, I'm going to have to make this putt before he putted the ball. I'm going to have to make this putt. I wasn't thinking I had to hit it one. He had a 30-footer and I had a 2.5-footer. I didn't relax at all. And when he made the putt, the crowd went absolutely ballistic. It was an airplane roar, jet engine roar, and it didn't subside. It just kept on going and going and going. And I said, well, the heck with it. I'm going to putt my ball when they're still cheering for Jack. So I bent down to put my ball down to my mark. And as I was lifting up the mark, Jack is like this, puts his hands up. The crowd went silent in about 3 seconds, only in the game of golf. They respected the game that much. Jack said, all right, let this man have his due. And it went dead silent. I looked at the putt, took my two practice swings, and I putted it in the right center of the hole. It wasn't dead center, but right center, and won it. And at that time there, Matt, when I walked off the green, Jack came over to me, and he put his arm around my neck like this, gave me a tug like this, and he looked at me. He said, Tom, I gave you my best shot, but it wasn't good enough. And he smiled and he said, congratulations, I'm really happy for you. And you know, at that point, Matt, in my career, that was probably the biggest change in my career right now. When Jack said he gave me his best shot and it wasn't good enough, I said, now maybe I've arrived and I can beat and play with the big boys.
Such a cool, cool story. Incredible. Only a couple more things I wanted to ask you about today, Tom, and then we'll let you go after you've been very gracious with your time.
Oh, by the way, Matt, just before you go, just a second. You know what hole this is?
That looks like 17 at Muirfield. Where is it?
Try again.
Could it be 18 at Turnberry?
Well, you got Turnberry right.
Oh, no, so is that 17? 17 at Turnberry.
That's the fifth hole at Turnberry.
Oh, the fifth.
That's the fifth.
Good thing you guided me on that. It's beautiful.
I just love this. I love this artwork.
It's an absolutely gorgeous picture. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, a couple things I wanted to touch base with you on before we say farewell. And that is, you are now one of the elder statesmen of the game. And I think the game would do well to spend more time soliciting the opinions from people that have been around the game for a long, long time. So I wanted to solicit your opinion. What do you feel about the game at its highest competitive levels right now, Tom? Is the game going in a good direction?
Well, the professional game is fractured. I think the game of golf in general is going in a great direction. I love the increased number of golfers that we see, especially the kids and the women who are more kids and more women are playing the game. COVID had a big effect on that, but it's still continuing. You know, there's an after effect to it. And that's really good for the game. With the USGA trying to move the ball back, we'll see how that comes. With the fractured PGA Tour and LIV Tour, that's really disconcerting. It's hurting the game, and I would hope that the powers that be in both parties would get together and come to a conclusion that it's not good for the game to fracture it and take some of the best players and play on one tour and some of the best players play on the other tour. Something needs to be done, and I hope it's done quickly.
And Tom, the last question I would ask you today, many, many years down the road, pray, what do you want the legacy of Tom Watson to be?
Very simple. When Julius Boros said, I'd like to have all the money you pissed away, Watson, that wasn't an affirmation. That wasn't an affirmation that I was a player. I just want my peers to say, you know, that Watson, he was a hell of a golfer.
Mr. Tom Watson, you were a hell of a golfer. There's no doubt about that. Thank you so much for the time that you've given us. Thank you for what you have meant to the game. Good luck with Watson Links, watsonlinks.org, folks, for more information. It's always a pleasure to catch up with you, sir.
Matt, it's always a pleasure being in your company. I enjoyed your show.
What an absolute delight to have Tom Watson on the show today. I mean, look at this. It's incredible the way the great champions find ways to continue to give back. When we come back, we're going to hear from Tony Finau.
I guess, hello world, huh?
And with one subtle hello, Tiger began an amazing and unthinkable career.
I've done it for 20 years now with Bridgestone. It allows me to play an aggressive style around the greens, and it's allowed me to win a lot of tournaments.
Bridgestone Golf, proud to be part of your journey.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to boynegolf.com.
I think when you're training for other sports or why most people go to the gym is so that they can like have muscles and, you know, be strong and be healthy. And a lot of the reason why they struggle to play golf is their body doesn't move properly for them to be able to hit a golf ball. And when you're training for golf, it's a little bit different because you're focused more on flexibility and mobility and being strong in motion. When you're able to kind of have a warm up and have a workout routine and kind of gradually build up to where you're training your body to move properly, yeah, you're going to get a lot of big dividends on the golf course.
Easy now. Find your happy place. It's all in the hips. Just tap it in.
Yes!
Find the latest clubs and apparel at Golf's Happy Place, the PGA Tour Superstore.
What if we started a company and the company was under no time constraints, no financial constraints? The one constraint is their clubs had to be exceptional performers and much better than any other alternative. I was told time and again, it'll never work. It worked like a house of fire. And I'll tell you what, I think our customers love it. BXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Stride by Zero Friction, the first of its kind personal caddy. Walk in comfort and style with Stride's remote and follow me technology. The Stride handles almost any terrain, and its 54-hole range will last all day. The lightweight design and removable front wheels makes it simple to handle. Plus, it easily fits golf carts. Order yours and save. Visit zerofriction.com/stride or scan the QR code to order yours today. Stride, your personal caddy.
So before we say goodbye, let's give you the air times of how you can watch the golf that is taking place this week. Starting tomorrow and same time on Friday from 4 p.m. Eastern time, you can catch the Texas Children's Houston Open on Golf Channel. Saturday is split between us and NBC at 1 p.m. on Golf Channel and 3:30 p.m. on NBC. Sunday at 1 p.m. on Golf Channel and 2:30 p.m. on NBC. That is not all the golf that you're going to be able to see this week. The Ford Championship presented by KCC, new event for the LPGA, Thursday and Friday from 7 p.m. Eastern time. Don't you love it when the golf is in prime time? A Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Eastern time for that. And then the Gallery Classic for the PGA Tour Champions, 4 to 6 p.m. You can catch that one on Peacock and the NBC Sports app on Saturday at 3:30 p.m. on Golf Channel and Sunday at 2:30 p.m. on Golf Channel. And then finally, the Hero Indian Open for the DP World Tour, Thursday and Friday. You can see it there, 3:30 a.m., Saturday at 4 a.m., and Sunday at 2:30 a.m. for your coverage. So if you get up very, very early, or if you wake up a cup of coffee with golf in the morning on Golf Channel. Right now, let's take you down into the press room in Houston.
It's nice to be back at a place. It's always nice to be back at a place that he won, and especially a golf course where I really performed well all week in 2022. So it's quite a different title defense. I just not playing the same time of the year and 16 months later, but I am happy to be back and looking forward to playing some good golf this week. I didn't have the result I wanted last week coming into my title defense. I missed the cut at the Valspar last week and 45th at the Players. So not the best finishes that I would have liked, but I've been working hard at my game. I'm as strong as I've ever been as far as getting in the gym and doing the work. So I know at some point the results will come. You know, the work is there and the body of work is there. And I just know sometimes you go through spurts where you just don't score it nearly as well as when you do at other times throughout the season. So, but hopefully this week I can spark a nice run. I wouldn't say different mindset, but you know, I have more obligations this week than than I would on a normal week. And you know, also I have great memories on the golf course, so that'll just help. Yeah, I think it definitely can add to the pressure. I guess being a champion at a place, people can expect you to always play well there, and also there's that added pressure. But I've been fortunate to have to try to defend a few titles over the last couple years, and so at least I'm starting to become a little bit more familiar with how it feels to defend a tournament, and hopefully have a nice title defense this week.
What an honor and pleasure having Tom Watson on the show today. Enjoy the golf, and until we are together again, be well and goodbye for now.